They think we're lazy.
They think we're weak-willed.
They think we're entitled.
They think we're selfish.
They think we don't care about anybody but ourselves.
We are compassionate.
We are resourceful.
We are capable.
We want to make a difference in the world.
We are underestimated.
If you've tuned into any news for the past 6 months, chances are you've heard everyone freaking out about ICE, immigration policies, and anti-ICE protests. Both sides of politics have a lot of things to say about these topics, and it's a very confusing issue, while not being a particularly new issue either.
Immigration has always been a forefront of American politics. Everyone has different ideas on how it should be handled and what policies to surround the legality of immigration. Democrats typically support lower deportation rates and lean towards making it easier for people to come here legally or gain citizenship while here. They also might view harsh policies wrong and even racist. On the other hand, Republicans tend to lean towards focusing on deporting all the immigrants who are here illegally. Our current administration is no different, and Donald Trump has made a few noticeable changes regarding immigration.
According to the Council of Foreign Affairs, the number of individuals in detention centers is now the highest it's ever been since 2002 when ICE was formed. ICE stands for Immigration and Customs Enforcement. Their main job is to control the flow of people in our country, specifically those who come into the United States illegally. It was created in 2002. And due to increased pressure, ICE operations are at an all-time high. However, Trump put in policies which changed things a little bit.
First off, the training for ICE agents was changed from 22 weeks to 8 weeks. This is likely due to the higher need for working agents to fill the detainee quotas the administration is hoping to see. A lot of debate has been sparked over whether 2 months is an adequate amount of time to learn how to properly do the job and be truly prepared for dangerous situations. One of the main things that was cut from the training program was 5 weeks of Spanish language training. ICE often encounters Spanish-speaking people, and being bilingual would be incredibly useful for an ICE agent to have. Trump has also made it so with a 40-hour training course, police officers can become ICE agents. The Supreme Court has also allowed ICE agents to use factors like race or speaking Spanish as a reason to patrol. Democrats argue that this is racial profiling and incredibly racist and unfair, while Republicans think that it is necessary to properly deport illegal immigrants.
One of Trump's other changes to ICE is the targeting of sanctuary cities. A sanctuary city is usually a city or county that has decided to limit what they will share with ICE. This could include information like homeowners' records, addresses, or visa statuses. They often decline to let ICE temporarily house detainees at their stations. Most sanctuary cities do this so illegal immigrants can report crimes they've been a victim of or witnessed without fear of being deported for doing so. Being a sanctuary city doesn't make it a safe haven, however. ICE is still legally able to come into the city and conduct raids or make arrests. Some examples of sanctuary cities that ICE is currently targeting are Los Angeles, New York, and Chicago. Sanctuary cities aren't the only place ICE is present, however. But what exactly does it mean for ICE to be targeting a city?
Usually, ICE targets specific individuals who they know are here illegally. They often surveil the targets, which can lead to arrests happening in public areas such as parking lots, parks, other public spaces. When they aren't targeting specific individuals, they often go to businesses to enforce immigration laws. They could arrest business owners for hiring illegal immigrants and detain the immigrants. To enter a workplace, ICE does need a judicial warrant. However, to make arrests, they can write their own warrant, also known as an I-200 or an I-205 form. The ICE agents themselves sign these warrants, and they don't require a judge to see or sign the warrant. These are the same type of warrants police officers use for arrests as well. Typically, these warrants are often written while detaining an individual.
The increase of ICE's presence has had a lot of people feeling a lot of ways. Republican officials, as well as the president, are typically almost proud of this. They feel that the country is becoming safer, often citing illegal immigrants who commit crimes such as rape, murder, or child abuse. Republican news outlet Fox News' recent headlines include: illegal immigrant accused of murdering newlywed couple arrested. ICE says it arrested pedophiles, sexual deviants, and kidnappers over the weekend. And ICE arrest illegal immigrant accused of kidnapping a 4-year-old girl at a laundromat. On the other hand, liberal news source CNN, recent headlines include: arrest warrant issued for ICE officer accused of pulling gun on Minnesota driver. And Army soldier speaks out after wife is detained by ICE in Texas. These headlines highlight the wrongdoing and unfairness of ICE. Comparing the set of Fox News headlines and the CNN headlines really puts into perspective how different the parties are viewing the same topic.
Democrats tend to feel that this increased presence is cruel, unnecessary, and even racist. They often cite immigrants who are here legally but not causing direct harm to anyone. They feel that ICE is doing more than they need to and causing more harm than good. Members of these communities targeted by these ICE raids are incredibly scared as well, especially with intense headlines like the ones listed above. Anxiety levels are incredibly high for everyone on all sides right now. One thing cannot be denied: this increase in ICE presence correlates with an increase in violence. One thing that is sometimes overlooked is that this violence isn't just falling onto the detainees, but also the ICE agents and normal citizens.
One major news story is the story of Renee Good. Good was 37 and living in Minneapolis, Minnesota. She was a legal American citizen as well. On January 7th of 2026, a group of ICE agents' vehicles was stuck in the snow outside of a school. The ICE agents called for help and were waiting for it to arrive when Renee Good pulled her SUV sideways into the road. Renee Good was accompanied by her partner, Becca. Renee pulled the SUV into the middle of the road, effectively blocking ICE off. She allowed for two cars coming opposite directions to pass. Two ICE agents pulled up in a truck and stopped facing her. They got out of the truck and walked towards her car. Becca was not in the vehicle when they approached. Renee put the car in reverse and started backing up, stating, "That's fine, dude. That's fine. I'm not mad." The ICE officer walked towards the back of the car to record the plates, where Becca was standing and recording. She told the officer that they don't change their plates every morning, and he could record her face as well, along with the fact that she was a former veteran. There's a bit of a dispute over the tone the girls were using, so we're going to play those clips for you.
Every morning, just so you know, it'll be the same plate when you come talk to us later. That's fine. U.S. citizen, former fucking veteran. You want to come at us? You want to come at us? I said go get yourself some lunch, big boy.
Get out of the car. Get out of the car.
The officer walked around to the front of the car while saying get out the car. Renee Good then reversed some more and out into the street. This is where things get even more muddy. It is unclear if Renee struck the ICE agent with her vehicle or not, and different angles make different things seem more likely. As she was pulling forward, the ICE agent fired 3 shots, ultimately killing Renee Good.
Jonathan Ross is the name of the ICE agent involved that day. He claims that this act was done out of self-defense and that Renee hit him with the car, effectively turning the vehicle into a weapon. The Trump administration opened a civil rights case, but closed it shortly after. He has been reassigned and continues to work for the government, but in a different state. I think this case should bring up a lot of bigger questions in our country. Due to false information and competing narratives, citizens have been struck with so much fear on both sides. The Republicans are scared or feel negatively towards immigrants because all they're being fed is stories about rapists, murderers, and child predators. On the other side, all the Democratic news outlets are reporting on ICE agents who have gone rogue, were too harsh, causing those who follow Democratic news to fear ICE.
Renee Good's case, while very confusing, is a perfect example of partisan politics indirectly causing more violence in our country. If Renee hadn't believed it was better to run from ICE than get out of the car like she was asked, she would still be alive today. Her case is a terrible tragedy and should be a wake-up call for our country, but clearly has not been as more violence occurs, particularly towards the ICE agents themselves.
ICE agents have actually faced an 8,000% increase in deaths since the shooting of Renee Good. They have also had a 1,300% increase in assaults. There have been 66 attacks with vehicles on ICE since January. Some websites have been created that have all the information about ICE agents and their families. This is referred to as doxing, where an individual's address, workplace, car information, and more is released to the public. Some people have even seen posters of people in their communities outing them as ICE agents and referring to them as fascist and racist. Activists aren't just doxing or threatening agents, however. They're also forming protests and attempting to interfere with ICE's job. Shortly after Renee Good's death, protests were happening all over Minneapolis, Minnesota. Tons of people took to the streets holding signs, yelling at agents, and even sometimes trying to physically stop detainments. One of these protesters was Alex Preddy.
Alex was a healthcare worker working in Minneapolis, although he was born in Illinois and grew up in Green Bay. His neighbor said he did, in fact, participate not only in ICE protests, but also the protest for George Floyd. He was described as friendly and had an adequate social circle. They reported that although he would shout at law enforcement during protests, they didn't believe he'd ever be violent. However, after his death, a video of him seemingly spitting on and kicking the tail off a cop car surfaced.
During a protest on 26th Street during January 24th, 2026, Alex Preddy was directing traffic and recording ICE officers. A woman was pushed by an agent. Alex Preddy then put his arm around her and stood between her and the agent. Another ICE agent pepper sprayed him and tackled him to the ground. This is when it was discovered that Alex Preddy was concealed carrying at the time. While being held down, Alex Preddy was shot at least 10 times within 2 seconds.
This seems like a huge overkill, but you have to also look at it from the ICE agent's perspective. It was a very intense situation. 6 agents were huddled around the man on the ground. Someone can also be heard shouting, "Gun, gun," before the shots were fired. This was also after days of protests. I think shootings like this, while terrible and something that shouldn't happen, are the result of poking the bear. Agents are overworked, dealing with people interfering with their job all day. It would be easy to get annoyed and blow up or make a quick decision you shouldn't have. I think the real issue here is that the agents aren't being trained well enough in protest situations, leading to horrible situations such as Alex Preddy's death. Both of these cases we just looked at are from Minnesota, but ICE is doing their operations all over the country, so why are we only hearing about it in Minnesota?
ICE is not just doing their operations in Minnesota, they are also doing it in Texas. Between the level of cooperation from state authorities and the resulting visibility of enforcement tactics in public, this contrast of operations has become a central flashpoint for American partisan politics that is driven by fundamentally different state-level policies and media framing.
Texas represents 25% of all ICE arrests since their enforcement has gone up. Texas has processed thousands upon thousands of deportations without riots, mob violence against federal officers, and churches being stormed during worship services. Minnesota represents less than 1% of ICE arrests, and Minneapolis is on fire. But how do you explain that gap? The answer has nothing to do with immigration policy and everything to do with where Americans are getting their information. A national poll conducted by Signal called "Whether the Trump Administration's Deportation Efforts Have Gone Too Far, Are About Right, or Haven't Gone Far Enough," found that 50% of Americans said too far and 48% said about right or not far enough on the current deportation policy. That is a statistical tie. This shows that our country is split down the middle once again.
But if you only have consumed the news and social media, you can assume that 80% of Americans are appalled by what's happening. People are acting like this is the first time the country has felt guilty about its actions. But it isn't. Nearly half of the country supports this policy or wants it to go even further. But you wouldn't know that from watching on the news. The real divide is not what Americans believe. It's about where they're finding the information that shapes those beliefs.
The data gets more intriguing when you cross-reference these policy views with the media consumption patterns. Among the voters who believe deportation efforts have gone too far, 51% of those voters receive their news primarily on NBC, ABC, and CBS. These are the old-school news companies that used to be the main source of information for everyone to receive. Comparatively, social media platforms such as X, Facebook, Instagram, and TikTok are the new ways of getting information into today's world. Those who support stronger enforcement have a lower consumption of these media platforms and preferably use cable news. This emerges a clear pattern. Liberals generally trust and use the mainstream giants, while the conservatives have moved towards a mix of cable and newer online-only sources.
As we've previously stated, Minnesota represents less than 1% of ICE enforcement activity, but it has been receiving tons and tons of national coverage. With every confrontation, every protest, every dramatic standoff gets treated with helicopter shots, breaking news headlines, the full treatment. This overhypes the actual story with the facts and truth being buried within the lies. But if Texas is processing 25 times more the enforcement activity with minimal attention, why isn't it having any breaking stories on the news or going viral on social media? It's because people don't find following the rules interesting. TV news gets more views when there is chaos going on, not when everything is fine. The media prefers to report on protest and conflict because that's what makes them money. In short, conflict sells, and quite efficiency doesn't. The choice to focus on Minnesota is about feeding an existing narrative to audience that wants to hear what they want to hear, than telling them anything new.
The consequences to this have real-world problems. When broadcast networks run continuous coverage of the resistance and fighting towards immigration enforcement, it tells or sends a signal to people in other cities that they should do the same thing to get your attention and how you can become a part of the story. But by giving the resistance so much attention, the media makes people want to act out or even get violence because they know they will get noticed. The news doesn't just report on protests. It encourages more of them and then creates advertisement for more conflict.
For most American history, we've argued about policy while agreeing on basic facts. While Democrats and Republicans watched the same evening news, read the same reports, and saw the same footage, they disagree about what to do, not what's happening. Well, that is over now. We've entered an era in time where Americans no longer agree on what is true, and instead of everyone watching the same news and disagreeing on the solution, people are now watching different news outlets and disagreeing on the actual facts themselves. The voters recite facts that are brand new information to voters on the other side, not because anyone is lying, but because their individual media outlets simply never surface that specific information. This is what is called tribal epistemology. Your tribe or party determines not just what your values are, but your evidence. What counts as a credible source, a significant event, or an example, it can filter through your party's identity before it reaches your own judgment.
The Minneapolis situation shows the real danger. You have a city breaking itself apart over enforcement activity that causes a statistical rounding error nationally. You have activists storming churches, attacking federal officers, setting fires, and creating chaos, in which the coverage of that chaos creates more chaos elsewhere. Meanwhile, Texas is handling a quarter of all enforcement activity without any attention and drama. But no one is doing any news headlines over in Texas. The question can't get any more straightforward than it has gotten. Are you going to let the media determine your reality? Or are you going to seek out primary data, real sources, and information that changes your existing beliefs?
Our democracy requires a shared factual foundation. When half the country thinks we're in a human crisis and half thinks we're finally enforcing laws that we ignored for decades, creates a national-wide breakdown. Everything is a mess. Between false information being thrown every 30 seconds, the only way we can stop this is for people to step out of their comfort zone and actually find what they are missing.
ICE and immigration issues have grown from being an immigration law and deportation policy debate into a larger representation of America's growing divide. Different news outlets and social media platforms display two vastly different stories on the same event, thus creating more fear and mistrust among citizens rather than attempting to be understanding of both perspectives.
Statistics and examples illustrated in this presentation illustrate how media and politics influence individuals' perceptions of reality. Regardless of whether you support increased immigration enforcement or feel that ICE has overstepped its authority, it is evident that as time passes, Americans are becoming less capable of agreeing upon facts. Unless Americans begin examining their information beyond their political ideology, the continuing growth of division and hostility surrounding immigration will likely persist. In our next and final episode, we're going to cover the assassination attempts of Donald Trump.
Underestimated, Crashing the Parties was researched, written, and produced by Colton, Asia, and Bailey. Intro music by Haley. All other music by Shane Yoder. Our show artwork was created by Chelsea, and our series artwork was created by Colton. The Underestimated podcast is a production created in the Brandywine Community Schools Broadcasting CTE program. We want to thank you for listening, and a huge thank you to our community sponsors for supporting us and helping to fund our work. Please make sure to leave us a review on your favorite podcast player. And we'll be back next week with another episode of Underestimated.